Hello, dear listeners. Just recently, I was at an author event at my coffee shop, and one of the authors got up to read, and I was so taken by what she was reading, I thought, I'm going to be shameless yet again and see if she might want to be on my podcast. Christina Ramirez said yes. And her book, Empowered by Discomfort, brings so much forth for me because I love the word empowered, but then there's that second word, discomfort. And I was really intrigued to know more about what Christina was writing about. In this episode, we talk about her kids who, at the very young ages of 2 and 3, and maybe even before that, are incredibly talented musicians. They're just born for it. And it's really interesting. Christina relates this story of what happens one day when they're at the Taos Pueblo, which really beautifully frames kind of the relationship between her kids and their instruments. And then Christina shares another magical moment after the death of her husband about finding a place to live here in Santa Fe. She is incredibly talented, incredibly generous, and also, what doesn't she do? She snowboards, she competes in races all over the place, she's a change maker, she's an author, she's a creative. She's kind of like who I want to be when I grow up. I can't wait for you to meet her because this conversation is really sweet. So now, episode 136 and my interview with Christina Ramirez.
But one time they were playing at the farmer's market in Taos, because again, like they would play and they played every Monday night at a hotel in Taos. Like they were, you know, they really performed a lot. And so this woman comes up to me and she was from the Pueblo and she had a little stand of oils next to where I was standing watching my kids play. And she's like, you know, sometimes the instrument chooses you.
Identify yourself? How would you introduce yourself? Basically, who are you?
Sure. My formal introduction, I would say, you know, is like, I am an entrepreneur, I'm a motivational speaker, and I'm a best-selling author of my book, Empowered by Discomfort. But that's not who I am. That's like what, you know, that's what I do. So if you were to ask me like who I am, then I go back to like the things that I value. And my number one value has always been integrity because it allows me to make mistakes, you know. So as long as I stay in integrity, then it's just a mistake. Like I didn't know any better. I wasn't trying to scheme. And so I feel like that gives me a lot of leeway of navigating life and taking risks and doing things like that because, you know, they're mistakes. And the other adjective that I would really use to identify with is creative. And it's funny that acknowledgement came later in my life. But I realized that I'm the person, I like to create things that don't exist, whether that is a book, whether that is a coaching program, whether that is a product, whether that is a website, whatever. And embracing that part of me has been a really important part of my journey.
I partially feel a little bit like, you know, you can sit down at your desk every day and write for half an hour. You can be diligent, but sometimes creativity, you know, that muse, that spirit kind of just comes and like inhabits you and like rides you like your horse. Have you ever experienced that?
Absolutely. And it's funny because I was just recently visiting my family in Florida and a good friend of mine from college came to visit us and she was my roommate. And she reminded me that I took a creative writing class in college. And she said, like, I would be writing and all of a sudden I would start like bawling and she'd be like, what happens? Like she died, you know, like she died. And she's like, but you're writing, you can make her live. I'm like, no, it's too late. She's dead already. Like, you know, it just, I think it's right. It's like that muse, it's like that inspiration that comes through you and your job is to allow it versus fight it.
ask about your book. I love the title because it's kind of shocking. You know, you say the first word and you're like, oh, okay, yes. And then you say the second word and you're like, yes. And then you say the third word. And I was like, what? It was like that record scratch. And you're like, what? That makes me uncomfortable already. But so what was the genesis of the book and how did you decide to write it?
Sure. So the book, so it's called Empowered by Discomfort. And I think, you know, for the past, since 2015, I've been working on confidence and teaching confidence a lot to children. And I don't believe that confidence comes from you doing things that you've always done. Confidence comes from doing difficult things and then you overcome it and then you feel like a badass on the other side of it. That's just how it is, right? And so Empowered by Discomfort is just what happened. My husband passed away pretty suddenly in 2021. And when I was going through my grief and sharing on Facebook, people would always tell me, like, oh, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I've always wanted to write a book, but I didn't want it to be a memoir. I wanted it to be more useful. So I started sharing the tools that I was using to get through the worst year of my life, which upon reflection were the tools that I have been teaching for years. It's one and the same. And so, you know, I it's part memoir, like part telling stories, but it's a lot of really practical tools that you can do to harness that discomfort and to harness the things that are in your life. And you're in control of changing it. So I can't control what happens to me, but I'm 100% in control of what I do with that. And that's what I wanted people to realize. And that was kind of the genesis of the book. I grew up in Brazil, and my parents are from Cuba, and they were very conservative Catholics, but a fear-based Catholicism, right? Like you do this because if not, you get in trouble. And I feel like, you know, my mom was always trying to be very dutiful, but not from a place of love and hope and faith, but from a place of, I can't get this wrong. And that was definitely passed on to us. And I was in the, you know, like I was, we had to go to mass every Sunday, you know, that kind of stuff. But over time, I went away from, I drifted away from Catholicism and from the church. I don't know. It wasn't resonating with me, and certainly, you know, not the things that the church as an institution did. Not so much the religion, but the institution of the church. So, I kind of parted ways with that.
I wanted to ask, just, you know, I read a little bit on your, I mean, I say CV, but I meant your website. You know, mm-hmm. You have some information about yourself on your website. And how did you end up in Santa Fe? Like, how did that happen? And you don't have to answer that if you don't.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's okay. Fine. It's actually a funny story. So I was living in Chile. My company from the US transferred me to Chile, and I crashed and burned at 28. I had this huge addiction. I was suicidal, and my parents at the time were living in Miami. So I went to Miami to get sober, and I went to rehab, and, you know, that was 20 something years ago. So it's, you know, it's a part of my story, and I have a lot of empathy for that, Christina, but it's not who I am today. So I landed in Miami. That's where I met my husband. I had my kids, and my kids were in middle school, and because I'm Cuban, I'm related to half of the city. So they would walk around like, I own this place. Like, I know everybody. I know. And I didn't grow up like that. I grew up traveling. So I lived in Brazil. I lived in Morocco. I went to a boarding school in Connecticut. And I realized that, you know, like my kids really didn't have that sense of, they've never been the new kids in school or anything like that. So we decided, okay, let's move somewhere for a year, you know, just give them, this was before COVID, this was in 2018. So we were on a road trip, and we came from Miami all the way to Colorado, and we passed by Taos, and we were sitting in Taos. I'm like, why not here? I mean, this is as different can be from Miami. If we want to give the kids an experience of, you know, being overseas, but not really being overseas, Taos was perfect. So we went to Taos, we spent a year there. Then we decided to stay, and Taos was my dream. And I lived in, you know, my dream home, and it was beautiful and all, you know, it was perfect. And my kids go to school in Santa Fe at the arts high school. So they were boarding here in Santa Fe. So when my husband died, I was in Taos miserable by myself, and my kids were in the dorm miserable, and it just didn't make any sense. So I moved to Santa Fe, and now we're all together here in Santa Fe.
Good. I love your sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm impressed that you could convince kids to leave everything they are comfortable with and everything they've known for a new adventure. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't, you know, I think that's how we sold it to them. You know, it's an adventure. Let's go for a year. Let's try it out. And then I didn't want to go back to Miami. And then some bribing was done for them to stay, you know. I'm not ashamed to say. And the bribing is, you know, it was a dog, which I wanted a dog anyways. And it was a trampoline at our house. So totally manageable. And with a dog and a trampoline, we decided, okay, let's stay here. But even before that, you know, I wanted to be the mom that did stuff with my kids. So we were always camping. We were always traveling. We did all kinds of road trips. You know, I used to race triathlon. So we would choose my races based on places that we would like to visit, you know. So one was like in Lake Placid. So we drove all the way from Miami, all the way to Lake Placid. We took like 4 weeks and so we always did stuff like that. So I think it's part of their DNA, and it's also part of our family culture. Yeah. And there's, you know, so my late husband was a history buff, and there's not one frickin' roadside with historical marker that we haven't stopped on. So every single day, it was like, we will deviate. So we went to all these places that people don't usually go to, or like we would learn. And we did find like that museum that's completely random, but totally cool, you know. So magic and me, I think like I lived in a magical world, in the sense like my sisters were older than I was. By the time I came along, my parents, you know, they left Cuba, they lost everything, and then they made it all back. And by the time I came along, everybody was happy and everybody had everything. And I was so much younger that I was alone a lot. So I very much lived in the world of my imagination. So I think that was always a thread in me. And when I got sober, I mean, I was suicidal. So I got my stomach pumped more than I would care to admit. But I remember the day that I decided, like, okay, clearly I'm not an idiot. You know, like if I really wanted to die, I would be dead, because Lord knows that have done a lot of irresponsible things. But I'm not dying. So I need to learn how to live. And I remember that day, like I knelt down and I just surrendered. I prayed, I don't know, to a God that I didn't even believe in. But from that moment on, I don't know what changed. I think it's like I started to listen, and I started to learn, like I started to be more enthusiastic about, okay, if I'm going to live, I want to be happy. I want to learn how to be happy. And in the beginning, like the early years of my sobriety, everything was magical. You know, and I was very much in tune with, you know, I was growing in my spirituality and things like that. And then over time, that fell up, like I didn't need it as much, or it wasn't as big a part of me as it was in the past. But then when Joe died, like I remember when, you know, I was holding his hand as he took his last breath, and even though I had never felt that much pain in my life, there was a part of me that understood that I was going to be okay. It was like this little chord or this little line that whispered, you know, it's like, the way you're feeling now, you're not going to feel like this forever. You've been here before. And since then, I feel like I've once again tried to reconnect with my magic and reconnect with my spirituality. So one of my best and favorite stories of that is I moved to Santa Fe in March of 2022. And that was when the housing market was ridiculous. And, you know, a place would go in the market and it would, you know, it was an hour and it was already sold. It was that time. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. You know, we need a place. I can't rent a place because I have two dogs and two cats and two kids, and it's going to cost me just as much. And we had, I used some life insurance, whatever. So we started looking for places and, you know, there was nothing. So one time it was a Friday night and a place came in the market and I was like, oh, you know, this looks like a really like a kind of place that's in our budget. It looks great. But the next day my kids snowboard and I snowboard and we had a competition. So we weren't going to be able to go to the open house. So I was like, oh, whatever. So my kid goes to a friend's house. They spend the night and he oversleeps. And I'm like, and so I'm like, how can you oversleep? Now we've all lost. We didn't go. And I was like, well, maybe we can go to Santa Fe and look for places because I wanted them to be a part of the, like we've bought houses before and they've always been a part of it. So I call my realtor and I says, you know, there's this house. It came in yesterday. And she's like, you know, it's very hard to get an appointment like this, but let me call and let me try. So she tried and the guy let us come in before the open house started. So they had like 15 people already to see the house. And because I was driving from Taos, I got here a little bit early and the owners were leaving. And I saw that they were from, you know, that they were from Mexico. So I talked to them for like a few minutes in Spanish and we saw the house and the house was perfect. Everything is new and brand, whatever. To make a long story short, because I'm already making this long, the house, by the time that I get back to Taos to put it in offer, they already had three other offers. And I was like, well, you know, whatever, it'll be what it'll be. And somehow we got the house. So I was like, oh my goodness, you know, we just bought a house in like 5 minutes. Okay. I guess that's how things are done. But at the same time, we have a code for everything in our, like for our phones and the computer. I'm not going to tell you what the code is because if not, anybody could rob me blind. But let's say it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, right? So we left, we buy the house and the house has a lock, like with a code, like one of those locks like that. Guess what the freaking code was on the door? It was our code. It was that one, like the equivalent of the 1, 2, 3, 4. It was the same code. And I was like, wow. Like A, that we got the house and B, that the house that we got had the same code. I felt like, okay, this is, you know, this is magic. This is, I'm sure that like a scientific person can call it a coincidence. And like, I know how it happens, you know, you have to stick four numbers in the freaking thing. So, but what are the chances, you know?
You know, if Santa Fe wants you here to like live, do the work, whatever you have to do, it will roll out the red carpet and facilitate whatever it needs to do to get you to stay here. And if it doesn't want you here, it will very quickly like barf you out. Yeah. So it sounds like the city really wants you here. And I love that. Are you at all surprised that your kiddos are both, you know, following this track in music?
No. So I was, they've been playing music since kindergarten. Like my oldest one he wanted a guitar. And so he went to Toys R Us and there used to be a comic called Phineas and Ferb. I don't know if anybody remembers that. So he used to walk around with his little Phineas and Ferb guitar and he couldn't, like his fingers were too small to make any sound, but he wanted to go to lessons. So I put him in lessons. And the teachers would tell me, is like, I can't teach him anything. Like, he's too, like, he can't make a sound. So he started on an electric guitar where he could make sounds. And I mean, that's how small they were. And then my drummer in kindergarten, there was like a drum class where they had these drum pads, and all they did was just like practice on the drum pad, and he loved it. And since then, I have one as a percussionist and the other one is a guitar player. So they've busked everywhere. Like, I have videos of them like in Memphis, you know, like in the street corner busking, and they would love it because they're really good, but they were tiny. So people thought they were super cute, and they'd make a killing. They'd make like $200 an hour, you know, in tip. Yes, yes. People don't like, so they're like, yeah. And then they would go and spend it on like video games or whatever it is that they did. But they've always like that thread in their life has always been a constant. They've always been in music. They've always had music classes or were performing in a band or in a concert or in, like, there was this place called School of Rock. They've been in School of Rock forever in Miami. So I'm not surprised, but one time they were playing at the farmer's market in Taos, because again, like, they would play, and they played every Monday night at a hotel in Taos. Like, they were, you know, they really performed a lot. And so this woman comes up to me, and she was from the Pueblo, and she had a little stand of oils next to where I was standing watching my kids play. And she's like, you know, sometimes the instrument chooses you. And it's like, so the instruments chose you guys as parents because you would allow the instrument to live through my kid. And I loved that. Like, for me, it was just like, I don't know, there was just something so magical about it, or just like that the instrument found my kids, but it was my only role was to allow it. And what they do with it, I don't know. Like, my guitarist doesn't really want to perform. Like, he's more into music production. My percussionist does love performing, and they'll, you know, I'm not going to force them to do anything with it, but it has been the story, you know, the story of their lives has been music. So, and I love that.
You know, since you said you met your husband in Miami, was he also Cuban? Because you said that, like, the community was really tight and everybody kind of knew each other.
Yeah. No, my parents wish they were Cuban. He was Cuban. As for a Cuban parent, it's called like the four C's. So it's Cuban, Catholic, conocido, which is like known, and con plata, that has money. I mean, I'm apologies for all the Cubans out there, but they know that that's true. My husband was none of those, like, not one. But I actually met my husband in AA. I met, like, he was also getting sober, and so we shared that journey together.
I was going to ask, like, do you think the kids' creativity is it from both of you? Or, I mean, you already said that you're very creative. Do you think that lineage comes through you? What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah. So Joe was a music buff. Like, he loved music. So he exposed them to all different kinds of genres and singers and concerts and things that I know nothing about. So I think, like, the breadth of their music knowledge 100% comes from him. The desire to want them to be into music, and the schlepping of things here and there, especially of a freaking drum kit, you know, and that, I think I facilitated that process for them. But I think if I wasn't, like, in tune with my creativity or a very creative person, maybe I'd be like, you know, I want my kid to be rock stars, you know, not the ones that bashes hotel rooms, obviously, but, you know, I think, like, I come as a facilitator for that. But I think the music part of it and the music depth of it comes from Joe.
I love what that woman said.
Right? Isn't it pretty? I mean,
it's so beautiful, because it really brings it into this realm of co-creation right? Mm-hmm. And that the instrument is conscious and can recognize, I don't know, the ache or the yearning or the talent in a human and makes itself known. It kind of reveals itself.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully intrigues the human or enchants them. It's a very fascinating way to kind of view that relationship between the instrumentalist and the instrument, that it's participatory.
Yeah. And I'm not a musician, but I feel like it's the same with writing, that once that you don't play the instrument plays, like you just allow the instrument to be played, you know, because you practice and like you're not thinking about your hand movement. Your hand just moves and you become one with the flow. I guess, you know, that at least that's what I'm told. So I think that's what happens with them. And I have a picture of them. Maybe they're 3 and 2, like, and Diego has like this little plastic guitar and my little one has like a little bongo, before they were even ever exposed to music lessons. So that's why I'm like, you know, this was meant to be. And again, like whatever they choose to do with it, that's fine. I think like my role in this story of theirs was to allow them to nurture that side of them.
What I really love about this story is that your kiddos, right from the start, kind of had this magical calling and completely listened to it and just embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And to me, that is just fascinating. And I always think, what would happen if we allowed our children to be the magical little beings that they are? And right. We didn't try to change them or shape them or say, oh, no, that's a waste of your time. Do this instead. And I really appreciate the fact that you and your husband created this space for them to figure it out on their own. I mean, that's miraculous, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's our role as parents, right? And I think that we as parents get that wrong all the time. And maybe I even got it wrong sometimes in saying like, well, you've got to practice. But I wasn't very pushy, but I would, you know, I don't think I was very pushy. Because there was like, they have tried every sport under the sun. Like you tell me a sport. Oh, they tried when they were 3, maybe, or when they were 5. And it was, I was like, my stomach hurts. I don't like it. I don't want to go. I never got that from from going to music class. So I do feel like it was them. You know, I think now they get to choose whether they want to pursue that as a career path or not. And that's a decision that they're going to make on their own. That's not my decision to make for them.
And that's it. Another episode down the hatch. I need to thank Christina for being so wonderful and sweet and thoughtful during this interview, and for giving me some time in her really busy schedule to kind of share just a little bit of what she considers miraculous and magical in her world. I'd love to ask everyone who's listening to this podcast, please do consider leaving a rating or writing a little review wherever you find the podcast. These ratings and reviews help others find us. And for us creators, they're ever so important because, well, it's just groovy to kind of know what people think about you. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode. Justin Allen Arnold, Stephen O'Brien, Taiga Sound Productions, Winnie the Moog, and Fat Sounds. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to books, including Empowered by Discomfort, Christina's book, playlists, artists, and other groovy things that I hope lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Christina. Be open to the adventure.
put yourself out there. You know, she didn't know she was going to get that house, but she created a relationship with the owners who were going to sell. She put herself out there. She put her story out there. And then the house was theirs. You never know what's going to happen when you put yourself out there, when you introduce yourself to new people, who you're going to meet, who they're going to know that they might introduce you to that could completely open up your life. Staying safe at home is all right, I guess. But if you're like Christina and you put yourself out there, you never know what kind of magic is going to come your way.